Committee on Energy and Environment to order. Thank you all for being here. A couple announcements. You can see by the agenda that we've rescheduled and carried over House Bill or Senate Bill 634 and Senate Bill 339 to our Wednesday meeting next week. So if you're here for that, we'll take those up next week. And I did that so that I could make more time for the bill in front of us today for a public hearing on SB 990. I'm going to open that up in a minute, just for the benefit of folks that are here and watching. We are a little bit late in convening because the House floor just released at about 3:05. So my committee members are still making their way here and so forth. I want to have everybody understand the posture of this bill today. This is a public hearing to discuss the bill itself and the proposal on the table, not to have a generalized or philosophical discussion about whether or not we should have nuclear power in the state. That's not what the bill's about. More importantly, the procedural posture of this bill is that today is simply a public hearing, and the bill will be going no further. There will be no work session on this bill. There will never be a vote on this bill in this committee or on the floor. Senator Boqvist, who introduced the bill, his interests lie in how we accomplish grid security and diversification of energy sources in the state, primarily to supplement our ability and resilience to combat either cyber attacks on our grid system or natural events like the Cascadia subduction earthquake if and when it comes. So that's where he's coming from, and I'm holding this hearing primarily to benefit that point of view and explore that issue in connection with small-scale nuclear energy. With that, my goal is to have everybody heard today, and to do that, I'm asking a couple things of you. One is that your behavior and your demeanor be respectful at all times. I should only be, for the benefit of this committee so that we can get the testimony, I only want to be hearing the people that are at the podium. Okay? I don't want people speaking out of turn. I don't want people clapping. Okay? We need to move through this quickly and respectfully. And so while folks are up here speaking, please give them the benefit of your attention and your respect, as we will. We've got 38 people signed up to testify. In order to get all those folks accommodated in the time that we have allotted, I'm going to put folks under a timer of 2 minutes. That should be adequate for everybody to present their point of view. Some of my committee members may be leaving to either go testify on other bills if they need to, or to attend to responsibilities in their district, such as a school board meeting, I believe. So please don't be offended if folks come and go a little bit during the hearing. I have asked the representatives of NuScale to take about 10 minutes to explain some basic fundamentals about their company, about their existence in Oregon. And then after that, I'm going to go on and I'll take some folks from the proponent side, and then I'll alternate to folks that are that signed up against. I have one singular person that signed up as neutral. We'll fit them in somewhere. And then we'll go until we're done. Okay? With that, I'll invite Jose Reyes, Chris Colbert, and Kathy Higley for that initial presentation. While they're getting set up, folks, I also want you to understand that the folks from NuScale didn't bring the bill to the legislature. Okay. This concept was Senator Boqvist's, and so please know that even though I've asked NuScale up here initially to explain what they do and what the bill would mean to them, they're not necessarily a proponent of this bill as the originator. And whoever is ready, please go right ahead.
I'll go ahead and start. Chair Helm, members of the committee, my name is Jose Reyes. I'm a resident of Benton County, Oregon. I'm the co-founder and chief technology officer of NuScale Power. And I'm the co-inventor of the leading small modular reactor in the United States. I hold a PhD in nuclear engineering.
We do.
And I greatly appreciate the opportunity to participate in this informational session. I'm at your disposal should your committee need information for future discussions on the potential for SMRs in Oregon. If SB 990 were under active consideration, I would certainly be a supporter because Oregon would be advancing a technology that not only benefits the state environmentally and economically, it's a technology that has the potential to change the world. The global reality is that 783 million people do not have access to clean water. Currently in China, 4,400 people are dying per day because of outdoor pollution. 1 billion metric tons of food is lost or wasted each year because of insufficient refrigeration to get the food to market. 1.3 billion people without access to electricity, 5.9 billion people living in energy poverty. It's important that the committee recognize that a NuScale SMR is more than just an electrical power production system. We have designed it to be an energy platform that's part of the solution to the global energy crisis. A 12-module NuScale plant could produce 600 megawatts of carbon-free power, averting 4 million metric tons of carbon dioxide per year compared to a coal-fired plant. A single NuScale power module can produce 50 million gallons of clean water per day. That's enough for a city of about 300,000. That's just one module. A NuScale 8-module plant connected to an oil refinery eliminates 190 metric tons per hour of CO2. A 6-module plant can produce 190 metric tons of hydrogen for use in fuel cells and storage, energy storage. We have designed the system to be load following, so it actually allows a greater deployment of wind and solar while maintaining grid stability, which is part of a resiliency concern. The NuScale SMR developed right here in Oregon is unique in the world. It's physics safe. The reactor can shut itself down, remain cool for an unlimited period of time without computer, this is cybersecurity, without computer or operator actions, without AC or DC power, or the need to add water. This unique safety feature would allow NuScale plants to have a site boundary emergency planning zone. I view Oregon as an innovation state because I'm part of it. While I was at Oregon State University, I started NuScale Power with three base patents. We now have 350 patents pending or granted in 20 countries. And that's thanks to, in part to the innovation gene that's within our company, in our engineers. SB 990 would have sought an exemption to certain siting restrictions established by a narrow margin of voters 37 years ago. This was a generation of voters that really was not aware of the climate change concerns. So I applaud your committee for being willing to hear from a new generation of scientists and engineers who are here today. They are part of a SpaceX generation, and they're intent on making the world a better place. So thank you, Chair Helm and committee, for allowing this opportunity to provide input. And I hope that Oregon will consider the role of SMRs in future legislative sessions. Thank you.
Right. Chair Helm, committee members, my name is Chris Colbert. I am a resident of Lake Oswego and the Chief Strategy Officer for NuScale Power. I understand that today's hearing is an informational hearing and that there will be no further consideration of Senate Bill 990. However, given the progress NuScale has made since the last time we testified before this committee, I believe it is appropriate for reconsideration of the potential that advanced nuclear technologies, including NuScale's small modular reactor, have in Oregon's for future energy structure. Given the strong interest in today's hearing, I will defer to Dr. Reyes' testimony and our written submissions and limit my comments to what has changed since 1980 and since that last hearing we held. So what has changed? First and foremost, improved safety. With an emergency planning zone at the site boundary, that is a vast improvement over what current designs have with the 10-mile emergency planning zone. That is a tribute to the work and innovation of Dr. Reyes started back 20 years ago. Climate change. We're more aware of where climate change is going, and in fact, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change states that nuclear power is one of the key technologies required to go forward with deep decarbonization in the future, and also that nuclear power is on a par with other renewable technologies in terms of its emissions per megawatt hour generated of carbon dioxide. Affordability. Unlike the reactors being built in southeastern United States today, which are $15 to $18 billion undertakings that take 8 years, a NuScale plant is approximately $3 billion in 3 to 4 years time frame. Resiliency. All nuclear plants are designed to withstand extreme events, natural or man-made. NuScale is no exception. In light of concerns with respect to a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake and recent cyber attacks, we have initiated studies with the Columbia Lifelines Program to investigate how NuScale's attributes can contribute to a highly reliable and resilient network for the Pacific Northwest. Economics. The NuScale plant is competitive with coal and gas when taking into account the social cost of carbon. Flexibility. Dr. Reyes mentioned that, but we have the ability to do a number of things with our small design, including adjusting power to balance the changes in wind and solar generation as weather changes to meet load. The potential for integration with other technologies, desalination and hydrogen, further improves the benefits of NuScale's flexibility. Spent fuel disposal. Technical solutions exist today and are operational. For example, Finland recently opened its permanent deep geologic repository. The United States itself has spent over $10 billion developing Yucca Mountain, and other people have proposed interim consolidated storage facilities for commercial nuclear spent fuel in New Mexico and Texas. We don't underestimate the political issues associated with permanent repositories, but the technical and funding issues are there and available to us. Finally, there are two other items I would like to clarify. First, the concern over proliferation. A low-enriched uranium light water reactor, they have not been the pathway to weapons production in other weapon states. It's been through other means. Second, there tends to be some confusion as to the Hanford waste cleanup and a conflation with spent fuel from a commercial nuclear reactor. The Hanford cleanup is associated with the weapons program production back during the 50s and 60s. And unlike that program, all the spent fuel from commercial reactors is safely stored either in spent fuel pools or in dry casks, and has been for some time. And there is indication that that will continue to be the case for at least easily 100 years or more. In closing, we believe that NuScale SMRs could play an important role in Oregon's energy future as it seeks to decarbonize its electricity supply, improve its resiliency, while keeping it affordable and competitive. The world is looking to the U.S. to lead in these efforts, and increasingly, Oregon-based NuScale Power is that leader. This concludes my remarks, and I look forward to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Chair Helm. And members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Catherine Higley, and I'm professor and head of the School of Nuclear Science and Engineering in the College of Engineering at Oregon State University. I'm here today to testify in support of SB 990 as a faculty member. I hold a PhD in radiological health sciences from Colorado State University, and in my capacity as school head, I oversee a top-ranked nuclear engineering program and a top-ranked radiation protection program, which includes more than 300 undergraduate and graduate students and conducts more than $5.5 million of research annually. Since our nuclear program and radiation safety began at OSU more than 60 years ago, we have graduated more than 1,300 engineers and radiation health physicists. In our school, we fully understand the concerns and controversies surrounding nuclear power. This is why our research focuses on the design of next-generation reactors and also includes understanding the fate and transport of radionuclides in the environment. We also know that nuclear power represents a valued option in cutting carbon emissions and can complement and extend the reach of hydro, solar, wind, and tidal energy sources. SMRs in particular have an extremely small footprint for the energy that they provide, and their emergency planning zone will be substantially smaller than any previous nuclear plant design. In recent years, the vast majority of our nuclear science and engineering students have left Oregon in order to use their excellent education. There's no nuclear power industry in the state. The creation of NuScale Power has now reestablished a small but significant nuclear industry within Oregon. SB 990 would offer Oregon-educated nuclear engineers and radiation safety professionals the opportunity to work in a nuclear power facility in Oregon designed by Oregon-based institutions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, all three of you. Committee, we have time for just a couple questions if you have them at this time. Representative Johnson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. Mr. Reyes, thanks. Good to see you again. I think we saw you here 2 years ago?
In 2 years.
Somewhere? Okay. In a brief snapshot or soundbite, as brief as you can, could you explain, I guess, the differences between the safety components that you feel in the small-scale reactors exist versus traditional nuclear power facilities as they exist, the large-scale traditional nuclear powers. Why are these so much safer than conventional nuclear power facilities?
Right. Just basically put, in our design, we have a reactor which has the traditional fuel. It sits inside of an evacuated containment, like a thermos bottle, underwater, underground. That's the whole concept. And what that does for us in terms of safety is it eliminates the need for all the pumps and power and additional tanks. And if you have power in a nuclear power plant, you have to have backup power and you have to have backup pumps. We've eliminated all of that because in this design, the containment actually sits underwater during normal operation. So we've eliminated the big containment dome that you normally would see. And we've eliminated all the high pressure and low pressure safety injection systems. So we've eliminated all those components. And we can actually, our reactor will shut itself down without any AC or DC power, without any computer or operator action. And it cools itself off indefinitely just by natural circulation, heat rejection to the pool. For an indefinite period of time, it transitions from water-cooled to air-cooled without having any operator actions at all. In conventional plants, you have to have backup systems, even if you shut down your plant, to provide the cooling to the fuel over a long period of time. So it was a major step forward. When we announced it the first time, it actually got into the Wall Street Journal, because it was the first time it had been done this way. So we're excited about technology, and I think other folks are looking at the safety as something revolutionary.
Okay, thank you. One more question? Okay. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
And presenting to us. Okay, so at this point, I'm going to move back and forth between folks that have signed up for and against. So I'll call up now Chuck Johnson, Max Mueller, Deborah Higby, Sudika. Sorry, and Lloyd Marbet.
Come on up.
Thank you for being here, and whoever's ready first can.
Okay, I'll go ahead and start. Chair Helm and members of the committee, thank you for hearing our testimony today. My name is Chuck Johnson, and I'm the director of the Task Force on Nuclear Power for Oregon and Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. I'm also a member of the U.S. Department of Energy's Hanford Advisory Board. I'm going to skip chunks of my testimony because I have a lot less time than I thought I was going to have before I started. SB 990 is ill-advised, premature legislation that would require a special exemption from Oregon's voter-passed moratorium on nuclear power plant construction for small modular reactors, no longer requiring that a permanent repository for high-level radioactive waste be in place for the nuclear waste that would be generated by nuclear reactors 300 megawatts or smaller. SB 990 would also eliminate the requirement for a statewide vote and instead require a public vote only in the city or county in which the proposed small modular nuclear power plant is planned to be constructed. Oregon PSR believes at the very least that any new nuclear power plant system ought to prove itself before our state legislature should consider creating a loophole through a voter-passed law. The new scale floor reactor system being designed in Corvallis has not yet proven itself. It has not been built anywhere in the world. Its design was submitted for review to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in January of this year, and it is not expected that this review will be completed until 2020. The first of its kind NuScale floor reactor system is proposed for a site in Idaho, with construction to begin in 2022, completed in 2026, a date that recently slipped from 2023, as recently as November. It was listed as 2023 to be completed. 34 municipal utilities, mostly in Utah, are being asked to buy into its construction and operation. The high-level waste generated by light water reactors that are part of this system are identical to the waste generated in the current fleet of nuclear power plants in the United States, for which there is no permanent disposal site. We ask you to vote no on this. We would ask you to vote no on this if you had the opportunity to, and we ask you to oppose it should the bill come in some other form during this session or any future session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Chairman Hellman, members of the committee, my name is Max Mueller. I'm here on behalf of the Union of Concerned Scientists, representing our 13,000 supporters in the state of Oregon. And the Union of Concerned Scientists would also oppose Senate Bill 990 if it were being considered by the legislature. We are a nuclear power safety and security watchdog, We've fulfilled that role in the United States for 50 years. We're committed to ensuring that decisions about nuclear power are made on the basis of public health and safety, and we feel that Senate Bill 990 fails that test. The exemption for small nuclear reactors of 300 megawatts or less would be a significant departure from current public policy in Oregon. Current public policy requires a statewide voter approval for new nuclear power plants. That's a substantial change in public policy that we think isn't warranted, given that the advent of a new scale power plant is so far away in the future. The bill would allow nuclear power plants instead to be built if the local government, the city or the county, allowed it. We think that, this is too big a decision to be left to local local governments, given that the risks of a nuclear power plant can spread far beyond the power plant. And we think that all Oregon should have a say in the siting of these plants. Few Oregon counties could even accommodate the 50-mile emergency planning zone that's required by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And SB 990 presumably, I think, supposes that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will change the requirement for 50-mile emergency planning zone, but there's no evidence that they're going to do so. I also wanted to point out that while NuScale's design has some engineering improvements over traditional nuclear power plants, those improvements the plants still require the same nuclear fuel. They still generate the same amount of electricity per unit of fuel. They still present the same environmental problems associated with the mining of and refining of that fuel. There's still no national nuclear or national storage system for that waste. So there's a lot of concerns with the nuclear waste aspects of these power plants, even though there have been some improvements in the design of the plants. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Deborah Higby-Sudica, and I represent the Oregon's Hero Club. And it's important for you to understand that NuScale's nuclear reactors are not much different than typical reactor. SMRs are not small, and like typical reactors, they're not economical, not clean energy, not a clean energy source, nor inherently safe, and are not an answer to climate change. Small modular reactors contain 50 megawatt modules, but to be economically competitive with solar energy, wind energy, or natural gas, they need all 12 modules, 600 megawatts. 600 megawatts compared to 1,000 megawatts of a typical commercial scale reactor is not small, especially if you take into account the large complex needed to support the modules. So not much is small about small modular reactors. The words small modular infer that they're less expensive than typical reactors. As I explained, SMRs are not scalable. You can't just buy one or two. And to finance the factory needed to build modular units, it would take orders for at least 100 reactors. Similar to large power plants, banks will not finance SMRs until they're subsidized. In 2011, the Union of Concerned Scientists published Nuclear Power Still Not Viable Without Subsidies. This report shows that in some cases, nuclear power subsidies were greater than the value of the electricity produced. Some SMRs have not changed that picture. SMRs, similar to their full-size counterparts, would produce lethal radioactive waste, toxic for hundreds of thousands of years. Under current U.S. radioactive waste practices, every SMR complex will become a long-term radioactive waste storage site after decommissioning. SMRs offer no change to the problem of safely storing radioactive waste. Vast amounts of energy will be needed to isolate these dangerous wastes for generations to come. So I suggest that you do not vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thanks. Just before Mr. Marbet goes, I know that everybody spent time providing testimony, maybe writing it, and of course the record is going to stay open for you to submit that in writing. So please feel free to do so, and you can submit that to our clerk if you brought it and haven't submitted it yet. Go right ahead.
Chairman Helm, members of the committee, my name is Lloyd Marbet. I am the executive director of the Oregon Conservancy Foundation. I have submitted written testimony. Copies of it are on the table and back for members of the public. I would point out to you that while it's interesting that NuScale doesn't seem to be a proponent of this legislation, this is the second effort in 2 years to try and overturn the ballot measure that was passed in 1980. NuScale's always been at each hearing as a proponent of this legislation. With that, I just want to read a portion of my testimony. High-level nuclear waste is not restricted to the boundaries of cities or counties. Even with all the public relations of NuScale Fluor representatives, proposed local elections, the promises of safety, and the so-called imperviousness to a multitude of disasters, high-level nuclear waste will reside inside each spent NuScale reactor module, with the ultimate need for transportation and permanent disposal. No one can project all the scenarios of radiation exposure and accidents that will occur from the reactor site to the unknown location for possible reprocessing of the fuel assemblies and or subsequent transport of this high-level nuclear waste to a final waste repository that is yet to be constructed and capable of accepting this waste. No one also knows the problems that will occur with the structural components within each reactor module as they are exposed to the long-term degradation of radiation over its life of fissioning and the subsequent embrittlement of surrounding metal. What we are offered are the projections of nuclear salesmen and academic reactor designers with all their shortcomings, and I provide a quote which is quite famous of Hyman Rickover regarding the difference between academic designers and the practical operation and the problems that are experienced with real nuclear reactors. And I put an exhibit next to this because in the end, you know, regardless of how you want to come down and all the wonderful technology that we're being offered here, the ultimate containment vessel is the Earth. And the problem has always been inside of ourselves. We're being sold something that has not been tried. It has not been put through a process of any kind of real proof. And I subject to you that instead of two-minute hearings, require a contested case proceeding like the ones that I went in through for years with nuclear reactors so that we can look at the realities that are really a part of what you are being asked to be part of. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you. Thank you for traveling to be here today.
Thank you.
Next up, I'll invite some folks from the in favor list, Ed Seiner, Tim Frew, and Gary Becker. We get Renee Lenhoff up too. Renee, we'll fill all the seats we can. And whoever's ready first, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm, members of the committee. My name is Tim Frew, and I represent over 25,000 trade unionists as Executive Secretary of the Oregon State Building Construction Trades Council. Whether it be energy efficiency, retrofits of existing buildings, the construction of wind turbines, solar arrays, or LEED buildings, the Oregon State Building Trades are committed to clean energy, family wage jobs. Nuclear and SMRs in particular could be the key to fighting climate change here in Oregon and across the U.S. Nuclear power provides consistent baseload power without emitting greenhouse gases. Cheap electricity is part of what makes Oregon an attractive place for businesses to locate and expand. In addition to environmental benefits, there are attractive benefits for Oregon workers. Economic activity from construction and operation of NuScale SMR plant would likely remain within the state. This would create short-term jobs during construction and long-term jobs during operation for Oregon workers. SMRs can potentially be mass-produced at a factory and exported around the U.S. Oregon could be a national leader and exporter of a high-tech, zero-carbon energy source. Thank you.
Thank you. Whoever's ready next.
Good afternoon, Chairman Helm and committee. Thanks for holding the hearing.
Be sure to state your name for the record, everybody, before you begin talking.
Thank you.
Go right
ahead. Ed Senior, resident of Benton County in the great state of Oregon, representing myself. The bill as proposed is positive in that it recognizes that the new, even safer nuclear power generation is being developed. It seems prudent that the bill mandates nothing, only makes available additional carbon-free power choice, and its delegation of choice to the local city or county seems appropriate.
Thank you.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, my name is Gary Becker. I'm an attorney for NuScale Power, but more importantly, I'm a proud Oregonian, resident of North Portland, House District 44. And like many Oregonians, I'm an environmentally minded one. Like many of those Oregonians, I have concerns about the impacts of our power sources, all power sources, whether it be the impacts to habitat from dams in our rivers or impacts to habitat and birds from windmills, so on and so forth. I also have concerns about the impacts of nuclear power. Some of them have been mentioned here, perhaps in an exaggerated fashion. But it does have impacts. Unlike the impacts from other power sources, I believe that the impacts and risks of nuclear power are manageable. And that's what sets it apart, and that's what makes the next generation nuclear power have the potential to be the most preferred source of reliable, resilient baseload electrical power and other energy, not limited to electrical power, as Dr. Reyes has mentioned. I believe the approach under SB 990 is appropriate for the technology at hand. It right-sizes the siting approach in Oregon to consider most strongly the impacts of those residents that would be directly impacted by the siting of a small nuclear reactor. Prior testimony stated that the 600 megawatt NuScale complex is not much different than a 1,000 megawatt traditional reactor, but I would remind members of the committee that unlike a traditional reactor, it has 12 times the safety systems and 12 times the electrical power conversion systems that make it a more reliable, safer, robust source of power. Thank you.
Right ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Helm and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. My name is Renee Lenhoff. I'm a resident of Benton County, and I hold a master's degree in nuclear engineering. I didn't come from the nuclear industry, so I had some of the similar concerns that people in this community have expressed today. But having educated myself and experienced firsthand the value of safety and the focus of that entirely amongst the regulator and companies within the nuclear industry, it's absolutely impressive and held to be of the utmost priority and standard in the nuclear industry. I'd like to point out that the NuScale technology actually leverages our 60 plus years of existing technology. So yes, some of it is old technology, but that's great because we have experience and it's been proven to work reliably in the US, and we've learned lessons from that. The NuScale design leverages that experience and incorporates modern technology and safety measures and has eliminated a lot of these complications relying on the laws of physics to keep the reactor safe. Natural circulation will keep the reactor safe, as Dr. Jose Reyes mentioned. So there's no requirements of backup electricity or operator interaction. Another note I'd like to point out is that small modular reactors can utilize spent nuclear waste. So a lot of the discussion on nuclear waste is that it's sitting in a pool unused. What often people aren't aware of is that 95% of that energy is still available. Our type of design utilizes uranium oxide, and it reaches a point where it's no longer producing sufficient energy in this type of reactor, but it can be reprocessed and utilized in later reactors. And there actually is a small modular reactor design by General Atomics who uses that energy. So it's actually a way to recycle and reuse the fuel. It's not just waste. Just moving forward, looking at Oregon as a community, I'd just like to say that it's good to have a broad investment portfolio, and energy is no different. So relying on nuclear in parallel with the reliable energy, it would be a smart investment and worthwhile to move forward with.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you for being here, and we appreciate your testimony. Next, I'll invite Dr. Theodora Tsongas, I think. Dr. John Pearson, Dr. Andy Harris, and Dr. Nancy Pumpacker.
Good job.
All right. It's an occupational hazard to get everybody's name right. Thanks for being here. Whoever's ready, just remember to give us your name before you give your testimony.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Helm and committee members. I'm Dr. Theodora Tsongas. I'm an environmental health scientist and an epidemiologist with 40 years' experience evaluating the health effects of exposure to environmental contaminants. I'm a member of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Union of Concerned Scientists. I'm here today to express my concerns about the intent of Senate Bill 990 to make an exemption for small modular nuclear reactors. These reactors are unproven and are planned for siting within small communities, making the potential risks associated with them even greater. The health risks of exposure to radiation are well documented, in spite of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's willingness to ignore these documented risks to the public, especially to women, young children, and those still in the womb. Studies in Europe as well as the U.S. have demonstrated the health risks of radiation exposure. The report on the biological effects of ionizing radiation by the National Academy of Sciences has demonstrated that there is a linear dose-response relationship between exposure to radiation and cancer, meaning there is no safe level of exposure to radiation. Several studies in Europe have found excesses of leukemia in children living near normally operating nuclear power plants. Concerns are increasing for exposures to the child in utero, as well as young children, due to their increased susceptibility, and for epigenetic effects leading to increased risks of other chronic diseases. All the evidence leads to the necessity for precaution in a situation where we must depend on our best estimates of risk based on biological and epidemiological data. Precaution is absolutely necessary. We can only assume that exposures to radioactive materials released into the environment by operation, startup, and shutdown of these modular reactors and the radioactive waste they will generate, for which there's no permanent disposal site, will continue to raise the cumulative adverse health risks to the public. Thanks for letting me comment.
Thank you. Whoever's ready next.
Chair Helm and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I'm Dr. Nancy Krumpacker. I'm a retired oncologist. So everything that Dr. Tsongas said I was going to say, she stole it. Thank you. This bill, as already been said, would reverse Oregon's current protections against nuclear waste-producing activities in place since 1980 as a result of a statewide vote which passed with a comfortable margin. As you heard, there is no permanent repository in place to bury high-level radioactive waste. Radioactive waste from PG's Trojan plant remains in casks after it shut down in 1992. It's still generating significant heat and radiation. The half-life, the time it takes 50% of the material to decay, of radioactive materials in spent nuclear fuel ranges from 30 years for strontium 90 and cesium-137 to 24,000 years for radioactive plutonium. At Hanford just this month, there was the tunnel collapse on May 9th, and then the detection of a leak in a double-wall waste storage tank on May 19th. Handling radioactive waste over long periods of time is a major challenge. This company claims its reactors are safe. Accidents happen. So, in my opinion, Oregon legislators should honor their duty to protect the health of all Oregonians. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chairman Helm and members of the committee, my name is Andy Harris. I'm a resident of North Portland, a physician. I'm testifying in opposition to SB 990 on behalf of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Oregon is currently a leader in renewable energy. Development of small modular nuclear reactors is moving in the opposite direction. It's creating high-level nuclear waste with no available permanent repository. Let's be clear, renewables like solar, wind, and hydro are generally clean energy. Nuclear is dirty energy producing toxic isotopes, some of which persist for centuries and millennia. Whether the spent fuel is stored in holding ponds or in casks on concrete pads, it's vulnerable to terrorism from an explosive device delivered by plane, spreading lethal radiation across the Northwest. In the United States, or if the United States encourages the development of small nuclear reactors, it's likely that this technology will be sold overseas, encouraging a proliferation of nuclear energy. As you know, nuclear reactors are the first step in the development of nuclear weapons, which may well get in the wrong hands. For this reason alone, we should oppose nuclear energy on the basis that it will make our country less secure in the long run. Oregonians approved a moratorium on nuclear energy in 1980, mainly because of concern for disposal of high-level nuclear waste. Little has changed in the past 37 years. Physicians and for Social Responsibility would urge you to oppose SB 990. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hellman, members of the committee. I'm Dr. John Pearson, a retired physician and a member of the Board of Directors for the Oregon Chapter of Physicians for Social Responsibility. I've submitted testimony, and I'll abbreviate that considerably and paraphrase it in the interest of time. My main concern is the existence of the spent fuel and its effects on, or potential effects on, human health. The spent fuel rods are inevitably produced by any reactor, and they contain very hot material both thermically and radiologically and need to be cooled down for a number of years before they can ever be considered for future longer-term storage. In my testimony, I take as an example three of the most abundant radioisotopes contained in these spent fuel rods besides the uranium. And that's cesium-137, iodine-131, and strontium-90. And I explain how by emitting electromagnetic waves with sufficient energy to ionize, or that is disrupt molecules, they will lead to damage of cells, malfunctioning of cells, or simply the disease of cells. In the case where the affected cells are genetically important, it can lead to the offspring being either non-viable, malformed, or malfunctioning, that is, have a disease. So the existence of these spent fuel rods pose a continuous threat to human health. And as has been stated before, there are a number of risk factors that they are exposed to a number of risk factors themselves, and they will be in existence for a long time. Unfortunately, we are guaranteed a continuous supply of this spent fuel so long as we use any kind of nuclear reactor. And the point is that the risks posed by this spent fuel is independent of any safety claims of the parent reactor. These things have a persistent risk independent of their parenting reactor. And since we have essentially no defense against this radioactive material, it makes sense that we do the very least we can do, which is stop producing more of it. And it's for this reason that I would urge that we don't consider any legislation that would, in fact, result in the further production of radioactive waste. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Thank you very much for being here today. I appreciate it. I'll next call Cyrus Ashfar, Jeff Koski, Peter come on up, Kyle Brumback, and Peter Sabaya. Yeah, Jeff Koski, they're here. Yeah, Cyrus or Cyrus, there we go. Whoever feels like they're ready to go, speak right up.
I'll go first. Thank you, Chairman Hill, and respectable members of the committee. My name is Kyle Brumback, and I'm a graduate student at the Oregon State University in the School of Nuclear Science and Technology. I'm here representing myself and the nuclear student population at Oregon State. In 1980s, prior to the whole student population even existing, Oregon passed the legislation making these siting restrictions for large nuclear reactors, which at the time was completely reasonable. No one's going to doubt it, but old technology restrictions shouldn't apply towards newer technologies without a comprehensive review, especially with small modular reactors or just small reactors in general. My testimony is online, but just to save some time, the nuclear student population at Oregon State just wishes you would consider in the future possibly passing legislation to allow smaller reactors, because reactors, one, will help fight climate change, one, will help bring jobs and other resources to Oregon, and just make Oregon in general thrive in the future. Thank you.
Thanks. Don't be shy.
Hi, my name is Peter Sabaya. I have a master's degree in nuclear engineering from the University of Michigan. My background has been in safety analysis. I worked for the Department of Energy for research reactors. I have worked at small modular technology, and I have done risk analysis and health effects on personnel. My thesis was on nuclear materials. Basically, I've been working with radioactive materials and their effects on humans and materials for my whole young career. The concept of the SB 990 bill, in my understanding of it, is to give Oregon the option to understand alternate technologies and have a debate about what energy independence looks like for Oregon and what resiliency looks like over a long period of time. In my opinion, you would be doing a disservice to ignore new technologies that are available to you, especially ones being created through your universities and through companies that partner with many of the other organizations here in Oregon and in the Pacific Northwest. There is a lot of discussion about renewables and phasing out coal and climate change, but really the debate should be what is best for Oregon over the long run. So talking about, do we need baseload power? Do we need something to replace an outgoing coal plant? Do we need something to replace something that's on the river? Those all come into consideration. SB 990, in my opinion, in its understanding and the way it's written, is just alluding to there is a new technology that is SMRs, and we need to entertain the idea that it has a smaller site boundary based on this old technology that has been around for many years. In my opinion, if there are other bills that come out, the chamber should consider looking at these new technologies, whether it be solar, wind, nuclear, offshore wind, or tidal, and look at it from a holistic viewpoint of what is this offering and how has it changed. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jeff Koski. I have a bachelor's degree in nuclear engineering, and I'm a resident of Benton County, representing myself. I'm here today to express my support for the future of nuclear power in Oregon, and in particular the NuScale power design, which I feel is innovative, safe, and scalable, and will continue to be a leader in technology for the future for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Cyrus Afshar. I have a master's degree in nuclear engineering and systems engineering, and I moved from Virginia 5 years ago to just support NuScale power as a new alternative technology after 25 years of working in nuclear industry in international field. I'm just trying to answer clarify two things here. One of them is that I heard that all the renewable energy are so great, and SMR could not be one of them. I think there should be some clarification on that. There are so many issues with what we call renewable energy, SMR actually is a good alternative to add as a new technology to help the climate change. The second one is that I heard that it was told that, there is a danger of international proliferation if we develop new-scale plant or SMR plants. I just want to make a note that it doesn't matter how things goes here. The international competition is going to develop SMRs, and we have to be part of that game and part of that challenge. And if because we have a democratic society here and we have a legislation and much better than the rest of the world, we have to be able to compete with the rest of the world, and we cannot say not in my backyard. It has to happen, and it has to happen in the United States, in counties. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions, committee, for this panel? Okay. Thank you for being here today. We appreciate it. Next, I'll invite Ed Epley, Inga Fisher-Williams, Damon Moltz-Story, and Peter Greenberg. Thank you. Whoever's ready, go right ahead, please.
Chairman Rahelm, my name is Ed Epley. I'm from a resident of Corvallis, and I'm here in opposition to the bill. I've been active in the anti-nuclear power issue for probably 35 to 40 years. And the original changes or the original opposition to it has not changed that much in that period of time. The initial problem was the safety of the the generating plant, and the storage of nuclear waste, the hazardous waste. The waste is still the problem, has not changed any. Probably the scale of the quantity of the waste is changing. The design of the plants is changing. What hasn't changed in all that time is the operators and the builders of the plant. Almost all of the failures that have been associated with nuclear energy have been due to human error or human activity. It's not the plant itself, although they are being built with a better design. They still have human operators on them. That the community or that the representatives of the plant and the builders of the plant want to just downscale the size of the plant is still a direct violation of the Constitution of Oregon. We have put that into law, and it was specifically said until there is a waste, and it has seriously eroded my trust and the trust that my children have in the government that we have to allow this bill to have gotten as far as it is. We're seriously, the Children's Trust needs to have a long-term view, not just in the present time. It needs to go many generations down the line. That waste is going to be here for many generations, and it's a serious breach of the Children's Trust to have a variation in the state state laws. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. Based on that younger generation, maybe it makes sense for me to go next. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Damon Mott-Story. I work with the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. I'm here today to express my dismay at the Senate's passing of SB 990, and I urge you to not support principles contained in this misguided bill. Nuclear power has still not reached the point of being safe enough in order to qualify as a socially responsible source of power. The health impacts of radioactive waste are simply too great to ignore. For several years in the 90s, my parents taught English in a town near Nagasaki, Japan. They saw firsthand the lasting generational trauma from Nagasaki's nuclear bombing and its residual radioactive contamination. My family has remained very good friends with many of their colleagues from Japan, and when the Fukushima reactor melted down, our friends' reactions were largely along the lines of, here we go again, radioactivity will now harm even more Japanese families and communities. This perspective was important as I grew up amidst the rapid acceleration of deadly climate change. It is very clear to me that the nuclear technology as it stands has no place in the rapid and just transition to clean and renewable energy that our climate and communities so desperately need. As a young person recently graduated with a Bachelor's of Science and at the very beginning of my career, I'm deeply concerned about the extremely long-lasting impacts of radioactive waste. There has also been a lot of cancer in my own family, so I know that no family deserves to have the cancerous, life-threatening risk of living near nuclear waste. I strongly urge you to oppose any legislation resembling SB 990 so that no loopholes to Oregon's sensible moratorium will be created that could allow harm to the health of Oregon's families. I hope to have a whole lot of decades ahead of me, and I'd like to see that future powered by wind, solar, and other truly renewable forms of energy, not nuclear power. Thank you.
Thank you,
I'll
Mr.
Just remind
Chair.
Folks,
yes.
These microphones are very sensitive, so feel comfortable to back up just
sit
a little.
Back.
It actually transmits better that way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Helms, members of the committee. I am pleased to be here and speak in opposition to Senate Bill 990. This proposal is contrary to the voter-approved power plant construction moratorium.
Inga,
yes?
Can I have you give us your name for the record? I'm sorry.
Inga Fisher-Williams.
Very good.
I thought I had done so. Sorry. There's no reason to create an exemption from the prohibition that was approved by voters on future nuclear power plant construction. Nothing in the industry's fuel cycle or storage systems have changed. It's still the same toxic radioactive material, and we have no good way of treating it and storing it safely. If I read the NuScale prospectus correctly, they envision small reactors as backup power to industry and commercial enterprises dispersed all over the place, and this really leads itself to a dispersal of nuclear hazards, in my opinion. There is no reason, no timely reason, no urgency to create an exemption from the moratorium. Whether full size or smaller, the nuclear power plants have the same flaws of containment vessels becoming brittle and deteriorating before their lifetime. There are legacy costs to storing the decommissioned plants and the spent fuel. That is, those costs are not borne by the industry. They are subsidized. And I believe that the claim that a backup power whether it's fossil fuel or nuclear is needed for solar and wind and clean energies is spurious and not warranted.
Thank you.
In closing, I want to say that the umbrella of carbon-free is just a new wrapper for an industry that has misled us from the beginning. I'm old enough to recall when it was called too cheap to meter, when we were invited to come play in the nuclear park because it was so safe. Well, the only nuclear park we have contains 32 Trojan power spent fuel rods that we have to maintain for thousands of years.
Thank you.
My name is Peter Greenberg, and I own an energy company. First, I'd like to thank the nuclear industry for getting me into the energy business over 30 years ago when I helped with this initial legislation. We used to make solar water heaters and made about 10% of the ones in the state. After that, we made energy-efficient lighting and saved about 100 million kilowatt hours a year for our customers, cumulatively mostly in Oregon. And 7 years ago, we got into solar electric with the variable incentive rate program the legislators started and did about 30% of the projects. We own about 150 solar systems in the state and provide about $400,000 a year for schools and nonprofits, farms, people that host the systems, and at the end of the 15-year period, they get the systems. I want to talk a little bit about resiliency, which is what you mentioned at the beginning. In 2014, these countries, with or without very modest bulk storage, had the following renewable amounts of power. Portugal 64%, Denmark 59%, Scotland 50%, Spain 46%, list goes on and on. Denmark, which is probably the most resilient country, over the last three decades has been switching from centralized plants to renewable microgrid, making for a much more resilient system. Yearly, they shut off their whatever big plants they have left and make sure everything works. This makes cascading grid failures impossible, such in times of earthquakes. We all know that the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't always blow. Solar and wind, however, are a lot easier to predict than the unforeseen shutdown of a nuclear plant, from whatever reason, taking millions of watts offline in milliseconds. I monitor our various solar systems daily and can easily predict reasonably well looking at AccuWeather output over the course of a month. There was a study done in Texas, which has a unique state grid that's not interconnected with anywhere else. Anyway, the study shows that you can get 86% of your load from solar and wind, the rest from dispatchable renewables, biogas, feedlot power. So I think we could easily have a resilient grid without nuclear power.
Thanks. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions, committee? Okay, very good.
Oh, just one last quick thing. About 3 days ago, Tucson Electric Power announced a 100-megawatt electric plant coming online with the power purchase agreement of less than 3 cents a kilowatt hour, and they have 30 megawatts of battery backup. The total is going to be less than 4.5 cents a kilowatt hour. NuScale is predicting 8.5 cents a kilowatt hour for their plant in 2025 if it comes online then. So just the economics just don't make sense for nuclear.
Okay, thank you. It's interesting. Okay, so I've run out of folks on the in favor list, so we'll be continuing Peter Newland and Paige Spence, Mindy Stone, and Sandy Sandels. Whoever's ready, go right ahead.
I'm glad your lights are bright. I forgot my glasses.
Ugh, I hate it when that happens.
I'm Charles Newland from Corvallis, speaking for the Pacific Green Party, as well as for myself. Nuclear power has a record. Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima, and now the collapse at Hanford. Much too close to us. We know that no matter what the engineers promise, it isn't safe, and no human can make it safe. At Hanford, they've been trying for 50 years to dispose of the waste from a series of nuclear reactors, and still it comes back at them. Oregon voters 30 years ago passed a very wise initiative that there would be no new nuclear plants in Oregon until there was a safe waste disposal system, and even then it would require a vote of the people. Hanford just proved that there is no safe waste disposal, and there can't be. And it still makes safe for the people to have a vote. We fought a revolution for that. This bill would allow a city or county to expose the entire state and its neighbors to the effects of a nuclear accident or meltdown. Such releases are always larger than one county, no matter how small and modular the reactor. SB 990 is a direct defiance of the will of the people and a threat to the personal safety of all Oregonians. It would authorize neighborhood nukes in our state for the benefit of a single company. It's ethically reckless and would cause a political backlash if it passed. So I'm thanking you for stopping it in committee. That's a change in my plans. For the protection of all Oregonians.
Thank you. Whoever's ready.
Good afternoon. My name is Mindy Stone. I live in Swiss Home, Oregon. And I wanted to say that there's nothing that I would like better than to say that the Tooth Fairy is real. But in order to respect my intellect, I can't. No matter how many people tell you that nuclear power is safe and good for all of us, it just isn't. It's not true. If this were a court of law and we had to provide actual evidence that small modular reactors are safe and good and that there is safe disposal of nuclear waste, they could not present the evidence. On the other hand, those of us who oppose nuclear could provide plenty of evidence to fill this entire room. So after hearing from the representative at NuScale who just spoke to you, I want to address the two questions or the two questions posed by the gentleman about what has and hasn't changed about nuclear energy. My list is very incomplete, but enough to satisfy this non-hearing hearing. What has changed since the voters approved their right to determine whether or not nuclear energy facilities should be built again in Oregon? The changes. Two more massive nuclear accidents have occurred, Chernobyl in 1986 and Fukushima in 2010. How many nuclear events that go on daily, weekly, monthly without public knowledge due to a mass media not reporting these events at all at these operating nuclear facilities still operating? Too many to count. The closing of Trojan nuclear facility and deconstruction of the cooling tower in 1992. The dying off of sea life as a result of continued nuclear waste leaks coming from Fukushima. And more nuclear waste that has to be stored on site at facilities and threaten our lives. What has not changed? The NRC has no safe repository site for nuclear waste anywhere in the nation. The cost borne to the taxpayers to pay for the private nuclear power companies for insuring nuclear power plants and for the cost of cleaning up nuclear waste and the ongoing price for cleaning up and storing nuclear waste in Hanford.
Mindy, if I could have you wrap up, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. The lie that nuclear energy production facilities waste is not dangerous and is good for the people and the planet. Shame on the management at Oregon State University for patenting nuclear technology for profit off this deadly power. The students certainly don't benefit free tuition, and the alum don't benefit from the dangerous and costly results from nuclear waste. Thank you.
Right ahead.
Paige, you're ready?
Oh.
Either one of you.
My name is Marshall Sanders, and I live in Swiss Home. And I am just shocked that we are back here with nuclear reactors. Haven't we had enough with Chernobyl and Fukushima and Three Mile Island? We've been watching documentaries lately just in preparing for all of this material. And it's forbidden. This technology should be socially forbidden forever. It lasts for hundreds of thousands of years, and it has threat of wiping out life on this planet. It is insane to proceed with this. When we have solar, it's free. We have the wind that's free. We have the wave that's free. We've got, here's a California study that shows that rooftop solar will be cost effective by 2020. I have another document here from an article on Tesla. And he's got a new integrated roof and battery system for a home. It's outrageously expensive now, but in 10, 20 years, this will be totally cost effective. This will be on every house in this country, in the world, in 50 years from now. We don't need nuclear. Please, don't ever bring this up ever again, or we'll be here every year to stop it. Thank you.
Well, that's democracy, isn't it?
Good afternoon, Chair Helm, Vice Chair Power, and committee members. For the record, Paige Spence here on behalf of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Thank you for the time to testify. I also want to thank NewScale. They were great and came to talk with us and other partners at OLCV's office a couple weeks ago to educate our community a bit more about their work. And so I just want to be very clear that I appreciate all that they're doing, and I'm not here to testify in opposition to them or any other particular company. What OLCV is concerned about is that the context here is that in Oregon, you cannot get a site certificate for a nuclear power plant unless there's a plan for the waste. And even then, the proposed nuclear bill has to go to the ballot at the next statewide general election. So what's at stake with this bill is that it would move nuclear siting approval from the ballot at the state level to ballots at the city and county level for reactors less than 300 megawatts. Senate Bill 990 thus, in our opinion, creates a loophole for local government-sponsored small modular reactor power plant construction to avoid the 1980 voter-enacted nuclear power plant construction moratorium until a permanent waste disposal site for high-level radioactive waste from the plant is established by the federal government. So in addition to waiving the need for a permanent disposal site for high-level waste from the 300-megawatt nuclear power plants, identical in composition to the waste from larger nuclear plants, the bill changes the requirement of statewide voter approval to approval of the municipality or county which is proposing to build such a plant. And the relevant statutes here are ORS 469-595 and ORS 469-597. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paige. Any questions for this panel committee? Great. Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for being here today. Thank you. Okay. So we got... next, I'll invite up Michael Kerrigan. Did I just get Michael? No, okay. Rob Kimmich. Ron Davis, and another Peter Greenberg? Same Peter Greenberg. We already got you, Peter, right? Okay. Good.
Two would be too much to bear.
And then Sabine Hilding. Did I miss Janice Marshall? Janice, are you out there? Okay, I'll get to you next. I'm not skipping you. All right, go right ahead.
Okay. My name is Michael Kerrigan. I'm from Eugene. I represent a group called Community Alliance of Lane County, which is based, which does work in Eugene and Springfield. I think my colleagues have expressed my viewpoints, my concern about nuclear power. I'm concerned about the process. I moved here in 1980, and I lived in upstate New York, and I live downwind from the Three Mile Island reactor, which, you know, almost went down. And it just convinced me that nuclear power is not the answer. So I moved here to Oregon. I was really proud that the folks in Oregon voted against nuclear power. I'm a strong believer in that process, giving people a chance to vote. And so that's my concern here, is that it needs to be a statewide vote. So that's probably my biggest concern here today. We need to listen to the voters. We spoke out in 1980, and I believe that today we would also vote against nuclear power. So thank you for giving me a chance to speak with you today.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, my name is Rob Kimmich. I live in Salem, Oregon, and I'm opposed to Bill 990. Allowing local governments to install these small modular reactor nuclear power plant systems invite the spread of nuclear waste. These governments, the local governments, do not have the means to control the waste and are not likely to acquire the needed resources in the future. Even large governments like Japan and the U.S. have not managed to solve the nuclear waste containment problems, as we continue to see at Fukushima and lately with the Hanford site in Washington State, where a waste storage tunnel recently collapsed. Oregon must stand out as an example of responsible energy use. We must continue to follow the guidelines laid out in the 1980 nuclear power plant construction moratorium. Our grandchildren will be happy we did. Thank you for hearing my comments.
Thank you.
Okay. My name is Ron Davis, and I live in Lane County. And I have served on the Emerald People's Utility District Board for over 18 years now. And I found out about this by a advocate in Eugene, who isn't in our district or anything, but she just happened to send me an email, which I knew nothing about. The general manager of our utility worked for Bonneville Power Authority for 20-plus years. He knew nothing about it. And now I find out that there was a bill presented some years back to try to do this. And I really want to praise whoever I called today, and they said the bill was dead. So whoever killed this bill, thank you very much, because I'm not in favor of this bill, and I think it's irresponsible. And since that time, my wife has reached out to a lot of people. I was out of town, but we printed out this thing from the Union of Concerned Scientists today talking about how we still got the waste there at Trojan. We don't know what to do with it. And on and on and on. Within about, I think, 30 minutes, we got 8 signatures on this thing, so I'll present that to you. So, and we haven't, she hasn't ran into anybody. She has a business there in Cottage Grove. She hasn't ran into anybody in favor of this bill. So you've got a lot of sales to do on this thing. My feeling is that we have a nuclear reactor we've had for centuries, and it's several million miles away. Mm-hmm. And that's about the right distance for it. We don't want to move it out to our neighborhoods, okay? And I use that nuclear power plant every day because I have solar panels and I have a passive solar collector on my house, which the house is over, 100 years old, I guess. I built a passive solar collector on it. And you know, it works great. And that's about the right distance for a nuclear power plant, several million miles away. Thank you very much.
My name is Sabina Hilding. I'm a citizen. And I just want to say I'm a voting citizen and not in my backyard. Now, in order to meet its goals to lower CO2 emissions, there is the potential that the Oregon State Legislature is signing off on technology which uses energy pathways that are too toxic. Besides the proliferation of nuclear waste, these SMR vested interests do not accurately or truthfully state the cradle-to-grave volume of CO2 emissions associated with SMRs. Additionally, the terrorist potential is much multiplied with many small nuclear power plants. I'd like to refer you here to a document by the Institute for Energy and the Environment dealing with the problems of small modular reactors. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the German pronunciation of your name right away.
Sabina Hilding.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. We appreciate you traveling today. So Janice, let's get Janice Marshall up. And then Nancy Matela, Kevin Finnegan, and Lonnie Clark.
I'm kind of nervous. I'm Janice Marshall. I haven't testified since 1970 when they tried to put a Trojan-type nuclear power plant in Eugene, Oregon, and I testified against it then. How this bill came here, how it got through the Senate is shocking to me. It seems sneaky. It's nobody knew about it. We had to be emailing each other to even find out. I wouldn't even be here if somebody hadn't emailed me, and that upsets me. One of the big things, that's one of the reasons I am upset. I do believe in democracy, and that's the other reason that I think a vote is good, because it will bring a debate, it will bring newspaper articles, it will bring both sides. So our legislators can consider this and not kind of sneak it through without us knowing what's going on. And that's why statewide is better than some county or city. The other thing about county or city that seems really unfair is that we do get contamination. We are upwind or downwind of each other, and we're very close to other places. And as she said, 50 miles, 10 miles. Who knows? Who knows how the wind is blowing? I wanted to say that I think this is the most unforgiving technology, lethal, toxic, human error. Terrorists have been mentioned. The RAND Corporation studied nuclear power large plants, and they said the biggest danger for the United States was not nuclear war, perhaps, but even just having these big plants, because it actually has dirty radioactivity, and bombs aren't even that dirty. And we still have that, unfortunately. We have more terrorist threat. What I'd like to say about Oregon, maybe this thing has to be tested internationally somewhere. I hope it does burn waste, although it doesn't sound like it does. But not in Oregon. We have nothing upwind of us, nothing. No weapons bases, no waste sites. This is not the state for a guinea pig of an untested nuclear reactor, and certainly not without a vote of the people. The other thing is, it would not be economical if it wasn't exempted from, by Price Anderson, from being self-insured for damages. If it damages our homes, our farms, we won't get the money to move somewhere else, because it's so bad, it has so much damage that they can't even sell electricity if they had to pay for the damages in insurance. No one will insure them.
Can I ask you to wrap up, Janice, please?
Yes. I'm 74. I'll be dead. I'm here for the sake of future generations. This is 100,000 years. Human history hasn't even gone on for 10,000 years. We will be guarding this waste. We will be trying to keep our state safe.
Not much, though.
And don't do this. Not Oregon. Not this, not now, and not this unfair way. At least let us have a vote statewide.
Thank you. Whoever's ready next, go right ahead.
Okay. Hi, my name is Lonnie Clark, and I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I'm an enrolled agent. I help people with tax problems. I see people often with medical conditions that stem from exposure to chemical and nuclear issues. I'm also the host of a radio show called The Age of Fission, F-I-S-S-I-O-N, because post-Fukushima, that's what we're living in, because Fukushima didn't just happen. It's ongoing. It's still worse. It's not improving. It's getting worse. And for us to, like she said, the sneaky way this was brought into the legislature, I was stunned that my senator passed it. Oregon voted a long time ago not to make it a nuclear state. And with these new SMRs, which I, because of my radio show, I've studied them quite a bit, if they're going to build them in a state, let's watch them function, let's watch them grow and actually develop, because so far there isn't a single nuclear power facility that is identical, because they have problems. They cheat because of Price Anderson. We need to unequivocally say no to nuclear until it's a proven industry. And I personally think the nuclear industry needs to take a shift. Instead of building new power plants, figure out how to manage the waste that they've created for the last 70 years. And as an aside, when they say it's safe, I found a study. I'm actually a student at the University of Oregon. I'm going to become an attorney to fight the Price Anderson Act. So I found an article that said the IAEA never studied its safety procedures. So they, even these people that say they think it's safe, they're not even following what the IAEA said. And when it was studied, this is a group of six scientists in Spain, when it was studied, only one of their procedures passed it 50%. All of the other seven procedures failed. So it's an industry that's been manipulating and lying and misleading us, because there's a lot of financial gain, because they get to dig in our pockets and take our money continually.
Thank you.
Chair Helm and other members of the committee, my name is Nancy Metella. I'm with the Alliance for the Democracy, and I'm also representing myself. Nothing has changed since the passage of ballot measure 7 in 1980 with regard to safe disposal or storage of nuclear waste. Almost all of the 99 nuclear power plants in the U.S. are at capacity for storage of the spent nuclear fuel rods, even though the government promised them with amounts of money that they have been paying for storage. It's way beyond the promise A number of years ago, the DOE began hearings on their idea of beginning to truck the spent fuel and other high-level waste from across the nation to Hanford. These trucks would have gone up I-5 and across I-84. I asked at one of the hearings, how dangerous is high-level nuclear waste? I was told that one cup of plutonium, if sat on the table in the hearing room, would kill every one of us within an hour. The room was about the size of this room. The DOE project was shelved. The second point I'd like to make is that towns, cities, and counties can become desperate with need of revenue. A case in point, Cascade Locks wants to sell and bottle their spring water because of their depressed economic situation. It is easily imaginable for a town or county to approve the building of nuclear power plants in order to get jobs. This is normally understandable, but no town, city, or county should put the fate of all Oregonians in its hands with the threat of nuclear waste in our air, water, and land from inevitable accidents because they need a few hundred jobs. In fact, the state of Washington puts many Oregonians, I'm from Multnomah County, I'm one of those, in potential jeopardy by continuing to run the aged nuclear power plant, the Columbia Generating Station, which is 160 miles from Portland. In closing, it's hard to support this idea in any way, shape, or form because of the dangers and the expense, to name two. Yet every day we hear that solar and wind are growing by leaps and bounds, and with it, thousands of jobs and almost no carbon footprint. Thank you.
Hi, how are you doing today? My name is Kevin Finnegan. The first point I have to make is the original funding for NuScale is highly debatable because it's a result of a Ponzi scheme that stemmed from Kenwood Group. The second point I want to make is I'm from Long Island, New York, where we actually did have an experimental reactor. The operators were the Department of Energy, and they mismanaged the site and actually leaked nuclear waste and radiation into the aquifer and did result in the death and cancer of many of fellow Long Islanders. The third point I want to make is that there should be no legislation that should allow a company who is currently receiving subsidies from the government to further their profits in a state that has already outlawed nuclear energy. This is a disgusting criminal syndicate. We have no answer for the waste, and creating more is a crime against humanity. The science is a crime against humanity, and the idea to even go further with this is insane, and we're going to extinct life on Earth. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Do you have to go?
Or no.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I have one more. I have three more folks signed up. Mark Rabinowitz, Susan Gladwin, and Dan Meeks. Whoever's ready, go right ahead.
Right.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Dan Meek. I'm a resident of Portland. I was co-author of the joint report of the House Interior Committee and House Energy and Commerce Committee on location of a national repository for high-level radioactive waste from commercial reactors. I also testified against this bill in the Senate to no avail. Back in the 1970s, the Oregon legislature decided that decisions about the siting of nuclear reactors should be done at the state level, with certificates issued by the Energy Facility Siting Council after the adoption of statewide standards and the conduct of evidentiary hearings and the opportunity for judicial review and a decision based on the evidentiary record. Of course, the 1980 ballot measure reinforced that by indicating that the Oregon economy should not be burdened by radioactive waste with no place to put it. Senate Bill 990 shifts these decisions on nuclear siting to the local level, to the very local level. These decisions under the bill can be made by any city, no matter how small, or any county. Some Oregon counties have only a few hundred people. The decisions can be made under the bill with no process at all, just an ordinance, however the city or county wants to adopt that, and no evidence is required. So it totally eviscerates the siting process for nuclear plants of this particular size. Now, the last time I checked, radioactive emissions don't stop at city or county lines, and nor do economic effects. The Fukushima accident shows that contamination can require long-term evacuation of a large area, far beyond the political jurisdiction of any city or any county in Oregon. Mr. Chairman, you said that this committee would not have a work session or vote on the bill. I would like to ask if you can assure us that this bill also will not be reassigned to the Rules Committee for further process, and that will not be withdrawn to the House floor by withdrawal motion. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Susanna Gladwin, and I'm from Clatsop County, Jewell, Oregon.
But we can control the other.
And I thank you for listening. I'm opposed to SB 990. Oregon has a rapidly growing, clean, totally clean, renewable energy industry, creating lots of jobs. We have 24-hour hydro and a potential for 24-hour wave and geothermal electric production. Solar and wind production is booming, and the electricity can produce hydrogen for night and low wind times. The challenge is the balancing of the grid. The nationally recognized book written by a local Astorian woman called The Grid describes the balancing of the grid and the challenges really well. I recommend reading it. Resiliency is created by creating local storage and microgrids, and the microgrids being, I believe, fueled by wind and solar and hydro and geothermal, and on the coast, wind. I would hate to live close to a small nuclear reaction in a Cascadia subduction zone quake. It would take months or longer before such a quake and the devastation that would follow to have the resources to test a nuclear facility for leakage. I would hate to live wondering if that one next to me is leaking. The carbon footprint, the climate safety, the environmental impacts need to be computed from ground extraction, processing, transportation to and from the plant, and finally the storage until it is no longer toxic many thousands of years in the future. This bill would create huge local fights every time one of these small nuclear reactors would be proposed for each community, as was just mentioned by the fellow before me, with very small ordinance. I mean, it would be a terrible thing, I think, for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
Okay. My name's Mark Rabinowitz. I live in Representative Holvey's district. I wish he was here. I knew the late Stanley Thompson, who's a nuclear scientist who lived in Representative Barnhart's district. Quote from him, "The most intolerable reactor of all may be one which comes successfully to the end of its planned life, having produced mountains of radioactive waste for which there is no disposal safe from earthquake damage or sabotage." This is a Geiger counter. I bought it after the Chernobyl disaster and hopefully won't need to use it for future ones. But the cluster of Fukushima meltdowns shows combining nuclear reactors and seismic hazards is a faulty idea. One of the aspects of the Japanese accidents, still ongoing, is that having multiple reactors on site makes dealing with the non-damaged reactors more difficult when there's an accidental release from one of the reactors on site. This has been a major problem in Japan. SB 990 fits the paradigm that nuclear power is incompatible with democracy, as the NRC's 1975 Barton Report cautioned. Reactors were invented in 1942 to make plutonium for weapons. All reactors do that, despite the configuration of the fuel rods. They do not use up nuclear waste, they make more of it. In Oregon, we had a uranium mine near Lakeview, which is a permanently toxic site. Nobody knows what to do with it other than hope that the leaking is kept minimal. Because the only thing that can make nuclear waste safe is time, lots of it. If we were really concerned about climate change, we would prevent
we would prohibit massive deforestation. If we were really concerned about electric grid resiliency, we would not be ending the tax breaks for solar panels, ductless heat pumps, and other efficiencies, which are ending at the end of this calendar year. Learning to live with less electricity and cutting our personal footprints on the planet makes a lot more sense than creating new ways for people to get cancer and birth defects. I've already had a cancer. I do not consent to being downwind of more uranium fission, creating ultra-hazardous fission products that nobody knows what to do with. And I'd just like to close with this from Dr. John Goffman, who invented some of the processes that the nuclear industry uses. He was assistant director of the Department of Energy's Lawrence Livermore Lab. Quote, at least several hundred scientists trained in the biomedical aspect of atomic energy, myself definitely included, are candidates for Nuremberg-type trials for crimes against humanity through our gross negligence and irresponsibility. Now that we know the hazard of low-dose radiation, the crime is not experimentation, it's murder. There's lots and lots of jobs figuring out how to be nuclear babysitters, and I respectfully suggest that OSU rethink how to stabilize the tank farms at Hanford and the fuel rods from the reactors and the mining tailings all over the western U.S. before making another microcurie of stuff that causes cancer. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is our this is the end of our last panel. Before you go, Mr. Meek, the answer to your question is no, this bill will not be reassigned to another committee. One, I wouldn't do it. And two, it's too late. So not only would it have been needed to be scheduled for a work session to survive in this committee, but it's also too late for any other committee. We cannot, this committee, and I as a chairman, cannot control whether it is withdrawn for a vote on the floor, but that requires a motion by a any member can make a motion on the floor to withdraw a bill from a committee, but it takes a vote of 31 to get it there. So I think you can do the math. And I would recognize Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make a couple of comments. I think, Mr. Chair, this has been a good hearing today. It's been a useful hearing. It has reminded us of many of the issues that we face in dealing with energy. I've been following the issue of dealing with climate change and with energy production now for several years, and I'm absolutely convinced that the correct approach to dealing with our energy needs are among the ones that were talked about and by several of the witnesses here today, including the very last one who talked about conservation and the use of renewable systems. I particularly liked also the comment earlier in the day about that giant nuclear power plant in the sky off in the distance, being at about the right distance away. I would have liked to have heard more from the proponents about the problems that have been raised by the opponents. One of the issues that I'm concerned about with nuclear power is the cost. Westinghouse is on the verge of bankruptcy, if it isn't already in bankruptcy, as a result of the development of nuclear power plants on the east coast of the United States that are not finished and may never be finished because of the cost. So the cost issues and a cost of continued development of these kinds of systems, I think, is a huge deal. I think we also have to have disposal systems that have been properly determined to be proper and that actually work, not storage systems that allow for or that require storage for thousands of years in order to protect the nuclear waste that comes out of the systems. I didn't hear any testimony today that indicate that those problems have been resolved. So those are among the issues that would be of concern to me. I have to say that I have difficulty understanding the Senate process, but I'm not in the Senate, and I'll leave that to you. I did want to comment on one of the issues that was raised by several people, and that is the issue of notice. Let me bore you for just a couple of minutes with the history of this notice requirement that the Oregon legislature has. In 1857, when our Constitution was adopted, in 1859, when it was approved by Congress. The notice requirement for a bill was that it had to be introduced and first read on one day before it then could be second read on a second day, and third read during at which time the vote occurred on a third day. That was the rule. What the legislature devised then was a committee process that between day rule reading one and reading two, there was a committee process, which is what we're involved in today. That process has remained essentially unchanged since that time. Additionally, however, we have this marvelous new gadget called the Internet, which was, of course, devised by the military quite some time ago, but which actually came into its own after 1993 with the development of the web browser, Mosaic and others since then. Many in the room, I'm sure, very familiar with this. But the latest development in Oregon, at least, is our website, OregonLegislature.gov, and you better put the www in ahead of that because you won't get to the site if you don't. It's www.OregonLegislature.gov. In that website, there's a little button called, they're referred to as OLIS, which stands for Oregon Legislative Information System. Within that button, you can find any bill that has gotten into the Internet since the time we started posting bills on the Internet. You can also find the history of the bill of any bill since that time. I don't remember exactly what year it started, but it was not this year. It was several terms of legislature ago. Now it is possible, it has been possible for some time to listen to the testimony being given during committee hearings and to the debate on the floor of any bill because it's on the Internet and being stored there. And this year, it is now possible to see, after the fact, any committee hearing, any testimony, including the things you've just said, on the Internet, available in connection with that bill. So it is possible for anybody anywhere in the world who has a connection to the Internet to learn these things about what the Oregon legislature is up to. I think that the problem lies in the notice on the notice issues, and that's what I'm talking about now, with the fact that none of us have time to spend our lives watching what the Oregon legislature does, right? So there have to be other mechanisms for people to learn what bills are before the legislature and things that they may want to interact with. My recommendation is that you get involved with organizations that do the job of keeping track of what we're up to so that you can learn when it's time to come and testify on a bill or when you ought to send us an email about your views on a bill. Now, further, every document that is filed with a bill shows up on our meeting materials and exhibits list, which is also attached to the bill. If you look at this particular bill, Senate Bill 990, there are a dozen, no, more than that, two dozen, more than that, maybe three dozen letters, comments, and other material, including emails, that are posted as exhibits on the bill. If we were going to move forward with this bill, I can tell you the members would read these this testimony before determining what they wanted to do. So while it isn't easy for a citizen who has other things to do besides watch us to actually know what's going on here, it is very possible for someone to keep track of these things for you and to alert you when it is time. And just to deal with this particular bill, let me do it really quickly, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate the indulgence. This bill was introduced on March 2nd. It was referred to the Business and Transportation Committee on March 3rd. A public hearing was held on April 12th, and a work session in the Senate was held on April 17th. The bill was carried and passed in the Senate on the 26th of April. And was referred to the Speaker's desk on the 27th of April after first reading, referred here to this committee on May 4th, and then the public hearing was scheduled for today. All of this material is available in connection with the bill in OLIS. So I'd recommend that to you for future reference. I want to say, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for holding this hearing. I've learned a lot today. I appreciate the proponents and the opponents of the measure coming forward and presenting their testimony. I would submit to the proponents, if I may, there's a lot of work to be done before I would vote for a bill like this. And the issues that have been raised by the opponents, I think, set it forth pretty clearly. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marsh, anything for the good of the order?
I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay, good. So for folks that are interested in this notice issue, Beth has just reminded me that on the homepage for the Oregon Legislature, at the bottom next to Twitter, the symbol for Twitter and some other things that you and Facebook, you'll see an e-subscribe icon, and you can just click on that, and then you'll get automatically get email updates of what's going on in various committees. So, thank you very much for helping me have a very civil and informative hearing today. I felt that it went very well. I know that this is an emotionally charged issue for a lot of people, but in one way or another, we're all concerned about how we address our energy needs in a clean way and in a way that addresses climate change. And this committee and Senator Dembro's analog, the Natural Resources and Environment Committee on the Senate side, have been working very hard this session to get at these issues, not just how to attempt to transform our energy making into a less carbon-intensive endeavor, but actually how to roll climate change back. So I know we're all interested in the same outcome. We're trying to get it at it from different ways. And being able to talk about this in a civil way where we keep our heads on is really important. So you have my thanks for that. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the Committee on Energy and Environment.
Thank you.
Committee on Energy and Environment.